Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education. Today is October 28th, 2013, and the time is 7:32 p.m. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice of January 10, 2013. Faxing to three newspapers designated by the board, posting on the district website and bulletin boards, and faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Mrs. Spitzer, would you please do the roll call vote?
Mrs. Grant?
Here.
Mrs. Presti?
Here.
Mr. Freda?
Present.
Mr. Higgins?
Here.
Mr. Malloy?
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Here.
And Mr. Sturgis?
Present. Mrs. Presti, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Sure.
Of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you again, everybody, for coming. The bulk of the time in President's comments I'm going to give to Mr. Shoreblum so he can give us an update on the progress at the Vaught House. But I did just want to make a couple of brief comments. We had a very busy month. It was actually a busy start to the year, but also this month we had several committee meetings, a special meeting to discuss Dr. Clark's merit goals. And I know that Dr. Clark, as well as the school administration and all the staff, have been busy with assessments. It's something that we're have been doing a lot of training on. We've invested some time into the training and into the technology, and now we're beginning assessments. And I hear a lot when I'm trying to reach Dr. Clark or she's trying to reach me that she's doing an assessment. So I know that we're very busy with that activity. That being said, Mr. Shoreblum, the microphone is yours if you can. We appreciate your update.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me? Can you hear me okay? Yeah? Okay. Yeah, I'm Don Shoreblum. I'm president of the award-winning nonprofit, the 1759 Vaught House, a Revolutionary War Loyalist homestead located here at the entrance to the Clinton Township Middle School is the house itself. And before I start to update you on progress, which so far has been invisible, I just want to thank the school district for alerting us to when the barn was removed, because we did retrieve a door from the house that it will now be reinstalled in the house when we get it restored. Okay, so everything changed with Hurricane Sandy last October. We had the trustees of the Vaught House nonprofit had put a lot of hours into developing a preservation plan. In fact, we met here a year ago, September, with members of the leadership team from the school district. And then Hurricane Sandy came along, and it all changed in one fell swoop. In fact, the 19th century barn, as you saw, it was knocked down by the storm. And what that meant for the Vaught House was that our preservation planning was no longer the way that it was registered on the New Jersey Register and the National Register of Historic Places, which is a farmstead through the centuries. Now, the house, built in the mid-18th century, is the only thing standing of historic value. The dairy barn's gone, the hay barn's gone, the wagon shed is gone, only the house remains. So we re-evaluated and decided to focus on the most significant period of this house's history, which of course is the Revolutionary War, and that's what really interested us in the house in the first place. As you probably know, Christoffel Volk and his son John Volk rode off in December of 76 when Washington was making his retreat across New Jersey and escaped across the Delaware to come back on Christmas Day and win the Battle of Trenton and Princeton. At that time, John and Chris and about 85 loyalists from this area rode off to New Brunswick and joined the British, fought in uniform, these green uniforms, throughout the war. Also, the ceilings, the decorative plaster ceilings, Waddell and Daub style ceilings, reflect their Palatine German heritage. So these are the reasons why it's on the New Jersey Register and on the National Register. So we had to get permission from the New Jersey Historic Trust, which holds the easement, historic preservation easement, on the house. When the school district owned the house, they were restricted because they were a government entity. They had to maintain it. When they sold it to us for $17.76, which was a steal, I'm not sure who got the better part of that bargain, actually. It's kind of a money pit. But when they sold it to us last March 2012, a historic preservation easement had to be placed on it to restrict what we could do. Much documentation, site visit by SHPO, State Historic Preservation Office, the New Jersey Historic Trust. End result was thick documentation and site visit. We ended up getting approval from the New Jersey Historic Trust to remove everything that was put on the house after about 1800. So if you take a look here at the 8.5 by 11 sheet, you'll see the our architect, Marco Margulies, his rendition of what the house would have looked like back in 1776. If you take a look at the larger piece of paper here, and I've got a couple more here if people are interested, you can see the front of the house, and you see the shadow outline of the two-story enclosed porch. Now, the front of the house faces 31 or 78, right? It faces south. The modern front of the house faces Gray Rock Road, right? The original front of the house is that side that faces south. We're going to take off in phase one emergency stabilization and roof replacement phase. We're going to take off that two-story front porch and expose the whole front of the house. Now, even more exciting or dramatic is on the other side. If you take a look on the second page here, the back of the house, 1830 wing, which is the side on the school driveway side, where it has that funny roof, right? Has that, looks like it's imitating the Red Mill roof, and the portico that faces Gray Rock Road, that whole thing is coming off. That whole wing will be taken off. And so what you'll have is just what you see here in that first picture, a house with a single gable and chimney at each end of the gable, right? The whole back of the house will look like this without the L. We're going to be, that will be step one, is to remove, bring the L down, the roof line down to about 18 inches above the ground, so we don't disturb the ground because there's archaeological easement all over the ground. Bring it down almost to ground level, and then that will reveal the roof, which isn't like this. If you look at it from Gray Rock Road, you know how it's like that, right? We'll take off that addition. The roof line is still there. And it'll be colonial with chimney at each end. And then this last stage of the phase one, stabilization and emergency stabilization and roof replacement, is to take off the 100-year-old slate roof, which has done its job, and is now replaced with pits of tin here and there, and the trash can in the attic. We take that off and put on a cedar shake roof, right? So that this is what would have been there in 1759, 1770s. And so that's that. The bids are out on that work. This is actually from the bid package. The bids will be opened November 7th at my office, which is Coldwell Banker, at 186 Center Street. It's at 2:30 in the afternoon. It's a public meeting, so you're welcome to come. And we will make a decision. The trustees will make a decision on Monday. And we expect that work will begin sometime shortly thereafter. Hopefully in December, you'll start to see them disassembling the 1830 addition to the house. And then at a later stage, another phase, we would be taking off the kitchen addition, which you can see the lean-to addition here on this drawing. And we'll take off the white stucco. Right, so that portico will be gone, the whole 1830 addition, two-story front porch, the kitchen addition, and we'll take off the white stucco and reveal the stone underneath. And it's, you know, it's finished stone, pointed stone, has to be repointed. We've got gently arched windows, as you can see in the drawing here. gently arched front doorway. So it's going to really, really be nice, really be a very attractive building when we get done. Okay, so that's really what we can expect. We expect to have the roof on before the dead of winter hits. So we've been waiting until we got approval, and now we got the bids out, and we'll be moving forward. So I'm open to take any questions or comments. Or yes, Dan.
Always known this as the Johnson Farm.
Yes.
Is there no historical value to those portions that are being removed? I mean, I understand the Vaught House significance, but there's none with this being removed.
You know, this was the discussion we had to have with Glenn Saponis from the New Jersey Historic Trust. You know, Glenn said, you know, look, here's a beehive oven that's like from 1840, right? A lot of people would call that historic, and you're going to be ending up taking that out to bring it back to 1776. So, and what about John Case, who owned this property later, right? Well, all I can say to Glenn is that John Case did not appear in the minutes of the New Jersey Provincial Congress, nor was his wife called before the New Jersey Council of Safety, you know, in 77, right? I mean, there is a historic significance to this, and the elements that are historic will be put aside when they take it apart, right? Especially if there's anything related to the house or anything else of historic significance will be placed on the cement pad where the wagon shed used to be, okay? But, yeah, you have to cut into the history in order to reveal the history that's underneath it. So that was a challenge, certainly. Yeah.
Thanks.
Other questions, comments? Yes.
How is your fundraising going?
Well, we have the funds to do this. It was only the approval that was holding us up. We will be going for another round. One thing that's also held us up in terms of funding from foundations and grant funding is that you got to spend some money in order to go out for the second round. We are always very grateful for the support, the community support we've gotten, and we welcome that. That's not only important in terms of financial support for things that grants don't cover, like insurance. That's also important because it helps to get committed people involved in this project, which now as we start to see some physical changes, I think we'll get more and more people involved, and it's going to be really exciting. So we're in a pretty good place with funding, but we're never far enough along because this will overall be a very, very expensive project, you know. And we're bringing a lot of money into this project from, of course, locally, but mostly from state and other sources.
And who does the maintenance, Don? I noticed that you were able to clean the property up and you were able to build that small fence along the driveway. It looks nice. Who actually does that work? Is it
The fence was an Eagle Scout project.
Okay.
Adam Wengren, who's been involved in this project since as long as I have, 9 years, basically, volunteers his time and the time of the people that work for him to come and do that work. There's more work inside the house that's been done by him and his workers, and also Michael Margulies, our architect, also sometimes volunteers his time and his workers. We've had cleanup days on site as well.
Great.
So I think we've got the township to mow now when they mow the school district, so that's a plus. We want to expand that area. Any other questions on the house itself, on the structure?
Does anybody in the public have any questions about the house or the project?
There's just one other thing I do want to mention, which I gave you all a copy of the events going on next year. You can take that with you. I'm not going to go through it. But you will notice that the tricentennial, Hunterdon County's tricentennial, is also the tricentennial for Christopher Volk. He was born in February of 2014. Well, I'm sorry, 1714. Yes. That's 100, 200 years.
Yeah.
Right. 300
good.
Years.
Right.
So in the celebration, February of 2014 is Black History Month and Christopher Volk's birthday month. So we are having three talks on the Volk, and one Michael Margulies will be giving in the library here on the house, and then there will be a tour of the house and grounds after that. But what I really wanted to point to is the public archaeology program that we're getting some funding for next summer. And this could be really, really exciting. We've had a lot of people that were already approached us, that were interested in digging in the dirt, maybe finding some things. There's a foundation in front of the house that was an ancillary house. We don't know exactly what it was. There's prior digs that test pits that have been done by Hunter Research, so we know there's some good archaeology in the ground. Chris Matthews from Montclair State will be here with some graduate students, and we're going to have 2 weeks, hopefully 2 weeks, of public archaeology in the middle of July. So if anyone's interested in that, know people that want to do that, have them contact us. That could be really fun. I asked Chris if middle school students were too young for that, and he sent me an email this afternoon saying they're actually ideal because they're mature enough and they're still excited. You know, they still have youthful enthusiasm. So if you mix in middle school students with older students, with adults, you could really have a nice program. So keep that in mind for next year. Maybe you could come up with a little funding to get your students involved in that. The way we plan to fund this is that we'll have a grant, and then we'll also ask people to make us, you know, small fee, perhaps, to so much a day or so much for a week. You know, 100, 200, not much. Yeah. Yes?
Just curiosity question. The molded plaster obviously has to be restored. Is that going to be restored by volunteers or professional restorers?
Everything that's done has to be done according to Secretary of Interior standards, right? So it has to be done by professionals. So all this work, the addition has to be taken down by hand, the stone addition taken down by hand, and everything when we get to the restoration has to be done according to the Secretary of Interior standards.
Not this old house.
Huh? Yeah, so, yeah, sorry. I wish we could. I wish we could, but we can't do that with volunteers.
When we were working on cleaning up the barn, one of the issues that came up was archaeological covenants and wetland covenants that we had to be very aware of and very careful when we were using any kind of equipment in the area.
Absolutely.
So I just want to make sure, and I'm sure you've already done this, but I just want to make sure that you're aware of those covenants and that any kind of digs or anything like that are cleared and supervised.
Absolutely.
And we're not breaking any covenants and create some other problems.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that very much. Both and also on this work that we hope to begin in within the next month or so, we also there, any equipment that comes on the site when they're taking down has to be on the existing hardscape. Right, it has the existing driveway from Gray Rock Road in there, and also the old school driveway, which is now stone. But certainly, absolutely, when you do, that's one of the things that Chris Matthews, as an academic archaeologist, will be responsible for, is to take, will be responsible for organizing the people that want to do the program, and he'll be responsible for getting it cleared and dealing with the archaeological covenants, which he's aware of, and also for writing up the final report on anything we find. And who knows what we'll find, right? Especially in the foundations. I mean, it could be really, really be fun. So, but thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sherbel.
Yes.
Oh, we got a question here.
Yes.
What do you guys have to do?
Yeah, that's another consideration. And I'm not really a house person, you know, I'm more of a historic narrative person, you know, so I mean, I'm not really up on the fine details of that, but Michael Margulies is the person who, he and Eclectic Architecture put together the bid package, which dealt with the issue of lead-based paint. So, I mean, there are restrictions on the contractors, you know, what they, and they all know what those are. It's all spelled out in the bid package, which is substantial. I don't
know
if it's that or if the workers themselves have to be protected. It's not like asbestos. The thing about yeah, now that's on the outside. This will be strictly on the inside. You know,
what would you think of the outside?
Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you mean. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. If there's that is a stucco material, I'm not sure if there's a lead-based paint over the stucco. I don't know, is the short answer. I could expound on that, but I don't know, but I'm sure somebody does. And really, the other side of this is a multi. You can see there's a multi-faceted task in your project, right? And so there's certain people that know certain things, and other people that don't know those things. But okay, anything else?
Any other questions? Okay, thanks. All thanks right, very thank much. You. We appreciate you coming in and updating us, and good luck
Absolutely.
With the project.
Yeah. Thank you.
Excuse me. Okay, when we started the meeting, I was a little frazzled because I was on the run a little bit. I had a couple of kids in sports and a little traffic, so I neglected to mention something. Mr. Sherblum and Dr. Clark touched on it, the barn. One thing that we had dedicated ourselves to doing is celebrating successes at these meetings. So that barn was down for almost a year, and we had a goal to get it removed before any storms came back, which was easier said than done because, as you might have heard during Mr. Sherblum's talk and Dr. Clark's question, there was a lot to contend with between the DEP, FEMA, the archaeological covenants, the historic preservation aspects of the project. So it was administratively difficult. It didn't take very long to remove the building. It looked like it was less than a week from start to finish, but that project is substantially complete. We do have some follow-up, but the main portion of the project, which was removal of the debris, was complete. So that was a success we're happy to report. I did want to overview briefly just the order of the meeting. I know there's some people here that might want to speak about some items on the agenda. From here, we'll go on to a report by Dr. Clark. We'll have is yours next, Heather? No. Then we'll go on to public comments, which is agenda items only. So that's the first opportunity of the public to speak. It's on anything on this agenda, including transportation. Then there's the first recognition of the public, which is an opportunity for the public to speak on anything. It doesn't have to be on the agenda. And then the third opportunity for the public to speak is at the end of the meeting after the committees have reported. So there's three opportunities, the first one coming up after the report of the superintendent of schools. So moving on, we'll move on to the report of the superintendent of schools, Dr. Clark.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you all for coming. I always like to see some friendly faces in the audience. I just wanted to share with you, before I go to the New Jersey Ask presentation that our curriculum director is going to present, I wanted to give you the rest of my report so then we could move on to the presentation. Our enrollment report is at 1549. For those of you who are keeping track of those numbers, last month I believe it was 1548. We're up one student, not significant, but one of the things that I want you to watch, because I think this will be very telling in terms of our enrollment numbers, is what happens over the course of the next 6 months. Usually the trend is that we start the school year lower and then we get more enrollments, there's moves, and our numbers start to increase and we wind up somewhere around 1,600. However, I'm not sure that that's going to happen this year, but it will be interesting to watch and see what happens with those enrollment numbers and how they move or not. In terms of a suspension report, we did have a suspension at Round Valley School. It was a one-day in-school suspension. I do have HIB, harassment, intimidation, bullying reports to make. We had two investigations at Spruce Run School. They were determined not to be HIB. We had one investigation at Round Valley School, determined not to be HIB, and two investigations at the middle school, determined not to be HIB. I do want to share some information about transportation. We have been making progress with our transportation issues. However, last year we did have complaints about some long routes. We had hoped to address them with a number of the changes we made this year. However, most of you are aware it didn't work as well as we had hoped. We do have a proposal before the Facilities Committee with more information coming tonight on costs that will alleviate some of these concerns about existing routes and the time some of our students are spending on buses. The Facilities Committee also heard some concerns expressed by parents regarding safety and stops at cul-de-sacs. I know the committee chair, Mr. Malloy, will be speaking to that, and the previous proposal I talked about this evening, and that there'll be a full board discussion providing some consensus and direction to administration on these specific requests. Then there will be a formal vote on the additional routes and spending. I would also like to share some information about an event that I attended and that our board president also attended with his lovely wife. The foundation had a 15th anniversary celebration. It was really lovely and I think a very solid fundraiser for the group. I was fortunate enough to be asked to speak, and I shared information about the many grants given to our schools and congratulated and thanked the foundation members on their years of service to our children and to the Clinton Township schools. For those of you who were not there, I don't know if they're going to have something like this again, but you might want to watch for it because there were many fabulous items to bid on in a silent auction and lots of good food. So it was a lovely event, and I think a good time was had by all. And I just wanted to share that information about the event. That's it for me for tonight, for now.
Okay, so we have, is Bobby going to present now?
Yeah, I don't know why, if you want to make the motion and then go back to
the
presentation.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, so we're going to move Dr. Clark's report, and then we'll finish out the report of the superintendent of schools with the presentation by Mrs. Philippe. So can I have a motion on 14SU005?
So moved.
By Rachel McLaughlin and a second.
Second.
By Maria Grant. And we're going to do all those in favor, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you want to do? Let's do roll call. Okay.
Mrs. Presti?
Yes.
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
And Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Oh, yes, motion carries.
Okay. Thank you. This is our director of curriculum, Bobby Philippe. Ms. Philippe is going to give a presentation on our NJIS scores from the 12-13 school year.
Good evening. As we report on the New Jersey AS scores, there are a couple of considerations to keep in mind because it's very hard to report on the scores accurately from one year to the next. Over the past number of years, the test has changed significantly. The bar was raised. The move to the Common Core has made changes on the test in some grades, and others are still to come. The transition to the next iteration of testing, the Partnership for Readiness of Assessment for College and Careers, the PARC test, will begin in the spring of 2015, but some shifts have been made towards that already, and more will be continuing this year. Over the year, the scoring has changed, the targets have changed, what is required for partially proficient, and advanced proficient have changed significantly in 2011. And when you're looking at especially the district compared to the district factor group, sizes can be a little bit misleading because in the district, for example, we may have a grade that has 200 or less students in it, where the district factor group will have 18 or 19,000 students in it. So the shifts are very different for those different sizes of groups. One of the things that changed this year was the writing tasks and the way that the state reported on them. In 2012, you can see where in third and fourth grade, for example, there were two expository writing tasks. In 2013, there was one informative or explanatory and one narrative. The changes were similar throughout the grades. These are changes that we're not aware of until we get the scores back in early September. Just to take a quick look at what these tasks are, the expository task asks students to share knowledge or convey messages and ideas. So it's pretty informational, it's pretty factual. They're looking for real information. Informatory and explanatory is similar, but students are given either a quote or an experience or a topic, and they need to interpret it and then respond to it and talk about their interpretation of it in detail. In the speculative, what it used to be called, now it's being called the narrative, it's really based on a scenario. The students are given some kind of a scenario, and they have to develop a story in response to that. And the persuasive is the students are given a controversial topic, and they need to support it with an opinion and with facts and with every year more and more evidence the state is looking for. In reading, the test reporting changed in that for a number of years, the state reported on working with text and working in analyzing text. All of a sudden this year when we got the report back, they reported on literature and informational text. So they really shifted quite a bit the way that they reported the scores, so it's really hard to compare the scores from 2012 to 2013. In mathematics, there was a partial shift. In grades 3 to 5, which have already begun implementing the new Common Core State Standards, the shift in the clusters of the mathematics portion has taken effect. So you can see on the right-hand side there on the top, the categories or the clusters or the subgroupings, if you would, of the test for 2013, and those are aligned with the Common Core State Standards in mathematics. In grades 6 to 8, there were no changes in 2013, but they will be coming this spring in 2014 because the curriculum has changed there. So if we look at language arts and we look at the district factor group, you can see that we're very, very, very close to the district factor group. And for those of you who don't know, the DFG, or district factor group, is a socioeconomic measure of communities, and they cluster districts based on the census socioeconomic data that they have. Clinton Township is district factor group I. The district factor groups go from A, which is the most poverty-ridden areas, to J, which is the most affluent areas, and we are I, which is pretty close to the top of the scale there. But if you look at the difference, we are less than 0.5% away from the district factor group. And if you kind of look at 2012 and 2013, the difference decreased because Clinton Township went up a little bit in English language arts and the district factor group dropped a tiny bit in English language arts. So we're very close together. If you look at our students in all grades last year in language arts, you can see how they performed. And if you look at the percent proficient and advanced proficient combined on the right-hand side there, you can see where fourth grade has the lowest percent of being proficient and advanced proficient combined. Fourth grade is generally a hard grade to really get strong scores sometimes. We are in line with the district factor group where in a lot of districts, the scores drop in fourth grade. One of the things of note, though, is that we have a lot of students who are in the proficient range and in the advanced proficient range. If you look at fourth grade by itself from 2012 to 2013, our proficient went down a little bit, and well, a little more than a little bit, but our advanced proficient went up as well as the partially proficient. And what that's telling us is that with the more challenging work of the Common Core State Standards and the more challenging questions in the test, that the students who are doing pretty well continue to do well, and they moved from proficient to advanced proficient because you could see a jump there. What we're seeing is that the children who were proficient but not as strongly proficient struggled a little bit more, and some of them may have dropped down to the partially proficient. So it looks like there was a squeeze in the middle where some moved up to advanced proficient and others dropped down to partially proficient.
So, excuse me, so then what you're saying is that the middle level students, the high middle responded well to the challenge of the stronger, more difficult raised bar of the Common Core, and the students in the middle who may have been on the lower edge of middle did not respond well to the challenge, and it was more difficult than they expected or that they were ready for, and they fell into partially proficient as opposed to the higher middle, which went, they were responded to the challenge and went into advanced proficient.
That's what the scores seem to tell us, yes, Dr. Clark. So if you look at mathematics, again, we're very close to the DFG, to the district factor group. There's very little difference between Clinton Township and the district factor group. And these are all for eighth grade students, which is what we compared for the language arts and the math here. In math, we looked at seventh to eighth grade students because that traditionally is a hard year for math for a lot of students. And if you look at 2013, from 2012 to 2013 for students, the same thing happened in math, where some students rose to the advanced proficient category and other students dropped down to the proficient category. So it seems, again, like the high middle rose to the occasion and were able to respond and do well on the test and move to advanced proficient. But the middle or the low middle students struggled a little bit more and maybe went down to partially proficient. And so we looked at eighth grade math over the years, and if you look at 2013, the advanced proficient increased from 2012. The partially proficient also increased, and the proficient went down because some went to advanced proficient and some went to partially proficient. If you look at science, we're very strong in science. In science is only given in the fourth grade and the eighth grade, so it's hard to compare from year to year because there are years in between when the children don't take the science test. But in 2013, 95.6% of our students scored proficient and advanced proficient combined, and 91.4% of our eighth grade students scored proficient and advanced proficient combined. So that's a very strong showing in the area of science, which we traditionally do have. So what are the challenges? You know, some of the challenges are it's just change, change, change. There's constant change in this test, in the standards. Over the past few years, the curriculum, the teacher evaluation system is changing. The bar has been raising, and the standards have created a gap. And this is just reiterates what we mentioned a couple of minutes ago, where we're losing some of the students in the middle because the high middle is increasing to advanced proficient, but the low middle is decreasing to partially proficient. So we're looking at how to lessen that slide and to help those children who are moving from proficient to partially proficient. But there's also good news in that Clinton Township School District is very much right up there with the district factor group. There are 96 clusters, including language arts, math, and science. In all but 13 of them, Clinton Township is within half a percentage point, above or below. Sometimes we're a little bit above, sometimes we're a little bit below, but within a half of a percentage point of the district factor group. The remaining 13 clusters, we're within one percentage point. And again, when you're comparing 200 students in a class to 18 or 19,000, that's a difference that's very minute and not really significant. In 2013, for eighth grade students, 93.1, when you're looking at all students, that includes general ed students, special ed students, everybody in the grade, 93.1 students percent students in language arts, 83.7 in math, and 91.4 in science are proficient or above. For general education students, that's taking out any students who would be classified with a disability, in eighth grade, 98.5% in language arts, 94.8% in math, and 97.9% in science scored proficient or above in last spring's test. So we do have students who are moving, especially to advanced proficient, at strong rates. In three grade levels, we saw cohort gains from proficient to advanced proficient from grade 4 to 8 in ELA. That means there were three grades where we saw strong movement from students who scored proficient in 2012 to the number or the percentage who scored advanced proficient in 2013. In math, there were four grade levels that saw cohort gains from proficient to advanced in grades 4 to 8 math. And where do we go from here? We really want to strengthen our implementation of Readers and Writers Workshop and model and instruction in the elementary grades. We've been working very hard on that, and we continue to work hard on that with professional development and materials and training. We want to secure and increase instruction of informational texts in all grades. What is happening is that there is more and more informational text in the test, and we want to be sure that we are prepared and that we have the informational texts and help instruct the children in those areas so that they can be successful. We want to increase our instruction in argumentative writing when the test moves to the PARC test, the Partnership and Readiness for College and Careers. The persuasive writing will be moving to argumentative, and there are similarities there, but the argumentative writing is where it is really based in evidence that they will have to dig out of text that they're reading for the test. We want to increase our instruction in vocabulary development, continue it to focus on fourth grade English language arts and move those scores up, increase support for elementary math instruction, so that we can strengthen those scores and continue to focus on 7th to 8th grade math and move those scores up also. But if you look at the conclusions, you know, we do have percentages of proficient and above that are very strong. Our students are scoring in very good numbers in the advanced proficient category and the proficient category. The North Hunterdon High School valedictorian and salutatorian are from Clinton Township in the last 5 of the 6 years, including 2013. We had both the valedictorian and the salutatorian. And the administrators and staff, we continue to work hard to raise the standards, to raise the level of instruction, to meet the kids where they are, and to try and help them score higher and learn more and achieve more through their elementary school years. Any questions?
Yes. Okay. I sort of know the answer. But in looking at this, this is primarily, as far as these test scores go, New Jersey-based. Is there any comparative data set to look at how our students are doing compared to a national database?
Not in the New Jersey ASC. There is a test called the NAEP test, and New Jersey scores very high in that test. That is a national test. We consistently score within the top three, sometimes one, sometimes two, sometimes three. Consistently, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New Jersey score very high in the NAEP, and that would be the national. When we do move to the PARC assessment, that's more of a national assessment, too, so we will be able to compare to many other states.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, Ms. Philippe. Thanks for the presentation. I've got a couple of questions, and forgive me if they seem challenging. When we look at these numbers, we look at the changes from last year. My sort of rough sketch pad math shows that math, our advanced proficient went up approximately 10%, while our proficient went down approximately 15%, and our partially proficient went up about 5%. Language arts, I'm seeing advanced proficiency up 5, proficiency down 12, and partially proficiency up 7, rough estimates. So as we see what looks like a sort of student body shift almost downward. What is our stated goal? When we compare to a district factor group, is our stated goal to meet the district factor group? Is it to exceed the district factor group? And what remediative steps can we take, and what's our time frame?
Well, our goal is always to exceed the district factor group. I think in language arts, the fact that we increased and the district factor group went down a little bit is a good sign there. From year to year, things do fluctuate a little bit, but we're very close to the district factor group. We do want to be above it. Our time frame is that we certainly want to improve the scores every single year, and we do have some strategies and new tools and new materials in place that we are working towards improving them for this year. The teachers in the different grades are working more specifically with data. We're looking at data a little bit more closely to keep tabs on how the students are progressing throughout the year, and also looking at implementing the new materials and the informational texts so that we can help those students raise their scores over the next year or two.
And thank you. And a quick follow-up to that. So what are the metrics by which we can measure that success outside of the test? What sort of, I guess, mid-term metrics do we have to gauge progress on those efforts?
Well, in up through grade six, we do administer the MAP assessment, and that gives us good data. And we are looking at that compared to how we did last year and how we're doing this year with that. One of the differences in the MAP assessment is that it changed to become more aligned with the Common Core this year also, because that needed to shift in order to keep aligned with what is happening throughout the country. But a lot of our students did pretty well in making that shift on the MAP assessment. We're also looking through the student growth objectives, which is something that all teachers are doing in all areas. We're looking to measure throughout the year, and we need to report that to the state at the end of the year also, how students did in different areas. In all buildings, one of the student growth objectives has to do with the language arts, so that we're seeing that there is a push towards strengthening those scores and strengthening achievement in that area across the curriculum. So even in phys ed and music and art, one of the student growth objectives, teachers there need to develop two of them, do address something in language art, but pertaining to the subject area that is being taught. They're not just doing something unrelated in language arts, but they're incorporating, looking at how students are doing in that area in their subjects areas also.
Do you mind if I just jump in here? I would like to share some other information, especially since we have teachers and parents in the audience tonight. This kind of all meshes together in a number of different ways. We have a new teacher evaluation system, and if you look at that, I've been meeting with teachers in pre-observations and post-observations, and teachers are scored in this new evaluation system. So they actually get grades in this. And the process is, one of the domains that they're looked at very carefully has to do with instruction and program. It's actually domain three in Charlotte Danielson. And one of the areas that I've been talking to teachers a lot about is moving them from a highly effective teacher would be they're scored on a grading system of 1 to 4, 1 being the lowest score, 4 being a distinguished level teacher. And we talk a lot in our meetings about how to get to that 4 category, that we often live in 3 and we visit 4. But the way we get those 4 scores is really that cross-curricular piece and the student responsibility piece. So those are two areas that many of our teachers are working very hard on to enhance in their classrooms. And that, you know, I was actually talking with a music teacher today about writing across the curriculum in terms of music class and the other day a math class. How can we raise the level of instruction? It's about talking about, writing about what we're doing in our other classes. So it's using that writing and language arts piece across the curriculum more often in classes, being able to talk about our work, how we're solving problems, how we're approaching them, is one of the areas where our teachers are really striving to make progress and improvements to move into, and we have many distinguished teachers, do not misunderstand me, but to move into that distinguished category on a regular basis.
Bobby, I have a quick question, and when I look at the math portion of the New Jersey Ask, it seemed to me last year, and I could be totally wrong, there were more word problems to students than in years prior. Mm-hmm. And I look at our math scores, and the children did very well. On the flip side, I look at what our children did with language arts, which are words and reading. And can you explain for me how we can do very well in math with an increase in word problems and the complexity of the math based on language, and then struggled somewhat on the language arts side?
I think that part of the explanation is we did change our math program last year in the elementary grades. We moved to the Go Math, which has a very strong word problem component to it. In the beginning of the year last year, a lot of children struggled and really had a hard time with it. But then as the year went on, the teachers were saying how it was so nice that the children were getting stronger and stronger in that. I think one of the differences is that in the math, when the teachers are instructing the children in solving the word problems, they're using very specific strategies for a very specific task. Those strategies do transfer into the language arts, but in the language arts, there are many more kinds of reading and kinds of writing that the children have to do that we need to strengthen all of them in order to do very well across the board.
Okay, thank you.
Isn't it also a little bit more complex because this is somewhat of an introductory year on some of this for some of the classes, so it takes a little bit of time for the students to recognize what's being taught, the methodology being utilized, and then to become a little bit more expert on it, which over a year, 2 years, 3 years, et cetera, starts to give that multiplier effect?
Yes. Yes. Whenever you raise the bar and make things harder, it takes a while for the students to catch up to that and to understand the differences in the way that the instruction is being delivered and what is expected of them. And since it was the first year, it was very challenging. It should get a little easier as the next couple of years go on. The next challenge will be that by next year's test, not this year, they're still transitioning, so they're making things harder and harder and more aligned with the new test. And then when the new test comes, the twist will be that it will be all computer administered, and that's, we're working on that also, because you can't put a child on the computer right at the test and expect them to be proficient if they haven't had a lot of practice in using those tools also. So we're looking at all different aspects of it to try and make sure that we keep pace.
And that's why we have today.
I think also, too, right, like you said, the test is much was different, do you know what I mean, from the prior year. So it's kind of hard to compare. You know, you're comparing apples to oranges sometimes as well when you
and
look at those.
Apples to roast beef.
Yeah. So I think for the overall, and considering the teachers implemented the Common Core within just that year, the students and the teacher, I mean, they did very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, considering the restriction that they had at that moment.
Yes.
One of the things that I'd like to share while we have some parents in the audience, and I hope they spread the word is to their friends about this, is that we're now looking at the PARC, the new assessment that's going to be done next year, not this year, but next year. And the bar is being raised not a little bit, but really to a very, very high level. I had the opportunity to look at some questions in language arts, and I looked at the third grade test. And when I looked at it, I want to share what I saw. Children have to be able to, they had to read informational text. It was about a character in history, all right? And then they had to answer questions about what they read. They had to read another passage about another character in American history and answer questions about what they read. That's simplistic, all right? Third graders, they read it. It was tough text, but you read it and you answer questions. Our kids are used to that. What they then had to do is take those two stories, all right, those factual, historical information, real information, and they had to, they were asked questions about those two stories then, and comparing those two stories, and finding similarities and differences. Think about what you see your kids doing in terms of homework now, where teachers are doing more Venn diagrams than they did before, that compare and contrast. And they had to, when they were comparing the characters in history, they had to talk about what their place was in American history, what the similarities were, and what made a difference in American history based on these two characters. And I have to tell you, I sat there reading the question for this third grade test, and I sat and had to think about how I would respond and write that essay. It was not an easy task. And I do a lot of writing in all of my education and my career, and I had to stop and think carefully about how I would approach that answer. So the bar is being raised to a very high level, to say nothing of the fact that they're going to have to answer these questions on a computer. So I'd like you to think about that, and when you're working with your children, and when you're reading with them, and when they're maybe reading newspaper articles, talking to them about what they're reading, comparing and contrasting it to other articles they've read, is going to become very important for their future and how they do on these tests. It's a whole different level of testing that our children are going to be facing for the future.
We're gonna finish the board, and then we're gonna roll right into public comments, and we can pick it right up again. Does anybody on the board have any additional questions for Ms. Philippe while she's here?
I just wanted to add that for parents or people in the public that don't know, that the test is a 1 week test. So we're working with kids all year, and you're looking at one moment in time when they come to school, and hopefully you fed them a good breakfast and they're ready to take the test. And so I think in comparison to Kevin's question, we as a district are looking at all the different types of assessments throughout the year, and we do benchmarking. Bobby can talk a little bit about the writing benchmark, where the students write to a prompt and then they follow the same prompt in the spring, and they can compare and contrast the teachers, what progress they've made. And I also think it's important that when you're thinking about Dr. Clark's example, that the test is timed. So not only do they have to make that comparison, but they're timed on how long they have to think about it. And that's a very hard strategy for a lot of our kids. So if you can practice that strategy at home, giving them a time limit, that's, I think, also really good advice.
Final thought on that. Actually, as a parent, I think a lot of the homework assignments are designed to be timed already. So I think we're jumped out on that here. Mm-hmm. I know that at least one of my children's homework assignments are designed to be timed, speed rounds and things like that.
So. And Mr. Molloy, as you know, the Policy and Curriculum Committee will go into this data in more detail. It'll drive the agenda for the meetings for some time, looking at the trends, looking at year-over-year performance, and listening to Dr. Clark and Ms. Philippe making recommendations on interventions. And the way they manifest themselves for the full board is we're building the budget. Mm-hmm. That's where the budget recommendations come from. Where are the areas of concern? Where do we think we need more instruction or instructional intervention or curricular materials? And that'll craft the recommendations from the Policy and Curriculum Committee to your committee as we build the budget. Does anyone else on the board have any questions for Ms. Philippe? So if you don't mind, we can roll right into the public comments section on agenda items. And if anybody has questions about NJASK or anything about what Dr. Clark just said, it would be a good time. Ms. Philippe, if she can stay there for a minute. We can knock out any NJASK-related questions, and then we can move on with any open questions on the agenda. So we'll move on to public comments on agenda items only. If anyone has any comments from the public that you'd like to speak to the board about, just please approach one of the mics and tell us who you are and where you live. And if you can, try to restrict your comments to 3 minutes. Thanks.
Hi, Amy Mack Isaac, 24 Riverbend Road in Clinton. Quick question on this park test that you're speaking of, Dr. Clark. The time frame was the thing going through my head. I'm thinking about my third grader now and trying to answer the question. I think academically he would be able to, but I think it would take him more time. So my question is, for this type of testing, is there an increased time limit? Are there fewer questions? And do they practice the timing in the classroom beforehand? But to that note, I want to encourage everyone involved to not teach to a test for the entire year. Because like you said, it is a moment in time. The kid could have been up sick. Who knows what could have happened the night before? They didn't get a good night's sleep, whatever it was. They don't test well that day. I think it's really important to do the benchmarks throughout the year, to do MAP testing, to do all different, and really look at the entire picture, not just this test. Even though I know that people moving here look at our test scores as a reflection of our district and things like that, I hate to think of the district teaching the entire year just for this one test. But I was curious to hear about this park test and what the time limits will be, and are there fewer questions to allow for that? And do they practice on the computer? Will they actually practice more than once throughout the year on the computer first, especially for our younger ones?
Yes. Yes, they are utilizing the computers more. We have a two-year initiative that we started this year in terms of the Chromebooks. That's these. So our kids are practicing more, working more in their classroom on computers, answering questions that way, working together as teams. So yes to that part of it. I'm not sure about how they're going to structure all of the questions on the park in terms of whether there'll be less or more, or how they're going to set it up. I don't know that they've been clear about that. Mrs. Philippe, have you seen anything on that?